For Pete's centennial, I'm just so thrilled to be able to say that for a day devoted to one icon of music and activism, we have another icon of music and activism on the phone right now, and that's Judy Collins. Thank you so much, so much for being with us.
Oh, you're so welcome. God bless WBAI.
And I know from my experience with Pete way back, he would bristle if people were too effusive about him. I hope I didn't offend you by calling you an icon.
No.
He hated, in my experience, when people were too praising of him. But anyway, and we're recording this on Monday the 29th, and Pete's centennial is Friday the 3rd, and right smack in between the two is your own birthday. So if you'll permit me, let me wish you a very happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
And having been born on May Day, do you think that that had something to do with directing the path in life and the values that you developed over the years?
Well, yes and no. Yes, of course. I mean, you have the resonance of May Day and the Workers' Day and all the things that it means. However, I also think it has everything to do with my father, who was a wonderful performer, singer, brilliant man, who was himself always an activist and a proponent of talking about things like McCarthy and the war in Vietnam on the radio. A lot of things that we were kind of primed for the 60s in my home, in the kitchen or in the dining room over our dinner table, because we talked about politics and we talked about activism and what can you do about this and you better vote, you know, if you know what's good for you. So I was ready, and I was very much led by my father's own incredible life and what he did and what he said and what he believed in. So I think I was ready for it, and anyway, it's the best way to go.
I should say that the first time I saw and heard you was in late 1963 at a benefit for striking Kentucky miners at the Village Gate.
Oh, my. I'm so glad we were there. So glad we were both there.
For those who don't know, that was a legendary Greenwich Village nightclub on Bleecker Street run by Art DeLugoff, who so many times gave the place over to raise money for good causes.
You know, his brother, Art DeLugoff's brother, was married to Lorraine Hansberry. I knew her because of him and all the... Yeah, everybody that I knew was involved in activism, and so... You know, I was swept up. The most recent thing that I have written, and it's all because I was always an advocate of Pete's music and Pete and Woody's work. The song that I wrote called Dreamers, which you should have somewhere on your playlist there, is a song about immigration. And I've just written it in the past year, and I'm singing it all over the country, and I recorded it. So it still resonates through my life.
My name, it is Maria. My daughter is a dreamer. She says that she is worried that she will have to leave. When I was only 20, I crossed the burning border. I came to find a good life and brought my daughter here. When I came to America, I hoped life would be better for me and for my daughter. And here I worked for you. I harvested the peaches in Northern California, and then in Colorado, my family and me. This land was made by dreamers and children of those dreamers. We came here for democracy and hope. Now all we have is hope. My husband is a good man. He is no raping criminal. His hands are rough and scarred now from digging in the earth. My daughter loves her father, and he was always gentle. He too came from Jalisco to find what freedom's worth. But will you send her back now to live in fear and terror? She is our only daughter whose dreams have been our vow. We worked to pay our way here. We gave our youth and promise. And in return you force us to go back to the war. This land was made by dreamers and children of those dreamers. We came here for democracy and hope. Now all we have is hope. My name, it is Maria. My daughter is a dreamer. She says that she is worried that she will have to leave.
Years I've had this fantasy about all these, listening to all these people who talk about closing our borders and sending those who they refer to as illegal aliens back where they came from. And of course, the whole thing has increased tenfold in the Trump era. But I've had this fantasy of rounding them up, locking them in a big room, tying them down, and playing your recording of Woody Guthrie's Deportees for them.
Oh, God.
Over and over again until they beg for mercy and say, we give up.
Yeah, that's right. And I'll tell you where I heard that song. I was 16 in Denver, Colorado. I was going up to the Rocky Mountains into a place called Lookout Mountain where the Denver Folklore Society met under the aegis of Lingo the Drifter, who kind of ran the show, and a couple of kids were there who must have been in their early 20s. They were probably going to School of Mines or perhaps University of Colorado, and this kid got up and sang this song by Woody Guthrie. The singer's name was Mart Hoffman, and he sang Deportees. I learned it then and there. It was sort of like when I heard Bob Dylan write Mr. Tambourine Man in the middle of the night up in the house where his manager lived in Woodstock.
Yeah.
But I didn't know until until about 40, 50 years later that Mart Hoffman wrote that melody, and that's the melody that we all sing. I didn't realize that he'd written that to Woody's lyrics. Woody wrote a lot of lyrics that he had other people write the melodies to, which I didn't know.
The crops are all in and the peaches are rotting. The oranges are piled in their creosote dumps. You're flying them back to the Mexican border. It takes all their money to wade back again. Goodbye to my one, goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mis amigos, Jesus y Maria. You won't have a all they My father's own father, he waded that river. They took all the money he made in his life. My sisters and brothers come work in the fruit fields. Rode that truck till they went down and some of us are illegal and others not wanted. Our work contract's out and we have to move on. 600 miles to that Mexican border. They chase us like rustlers, like outlaws, like thieves.
You know, when I landed in New York, a couple of things happened to me. I got to be a client of Harold Levinthal, who managed Woody and Pete and the Weavers and Theodore Bacall, practically everybody else. And, of course, I got to meet Pete Seeger and everybody else in the crowd. And I had a radio show on WBAI, which I bet, I don't know if you knew that.
Well, I was going to ask you to talk briefly for people who aren't aware of your history with this station, because I didn't show up at BAI till 1975, and then I used to hear Steve Post talk wistfully about the time that you'd been there. So you want to tell people just briefly about your BAI history?
The sad thing is we don't have any tapes of it. I used to have tapes that floated around here for decades. And then somehow, and I don't think they went to the Library of Congress, I'm pretty sure. I mean, my archives are there. I think they're there as of about 2012. But here's what I did. I had a show, and I put, what I do is I'd go to the studio and put a bottle of booze on the table and some glasses, and then Mimi and Dick Farina did the show with me. The people who wrote Wild Mountain Time. The McPeak family were on that show with me. Colonel Ray and Glover were on that show. Tom Paxton was on that show. And we'd sit around and drink and sing for an hour and talk about life.
Ah. too bad we don't have that show these days.
Yeah.
Anyway, I should really let you get on to talking, to saying whatever it is you'd like to say about Pete and yourself. Just hold forth.
Pete Seeger was my friend, first of all, and my birthday is the first. He's the third, and Theodore Bacall was the second. So our manager,
Harold
Levinsohl, used to have a party for all of us, birthday party for all of us. Sometimes it'd be in the country. He'd have a post-birthday, or sometimes it'd be in New York, and we'd all go over to his apartment and on the Upper West Side. And so Pete and I got to know each other. The first time I ever saw Pete, I walked into Harold's office in 1961 in April, and this man was lying behind the couch, stretched out full length on the floor, sound asleep, with his banjo beside him, and it was Pete. And I said, "Oh my God, is that Pete Seeger?" And Harold said, "Yes, and please don't wake him up; he needs the rest." And from then on, we would appear places, we would see one another. I would learn his songs. I recorded Turn, Turn, Turn in 1963. I was on the first big fundraiser for what they used to call Huntington's chorea, Huntington's, the illness. And that was a big show at Carnegie Hall, and Pete and Bob Dylan and Odetta and Bill Lee and a whole bunch of people were on that show. It was quite a historic event. Somebody's told me recently that they've found the tapes from that show, the videotapes, which means that one of these days we'll see it on PBS, I'm sure. Anyway, I loved him. I have many, many correspondences, letters from him with down at the bottom signed "Love Pete" with his little banjo, and we were friends. And I loved Toshi and hung out with them and did shows with them and socialized with them. And one day we were over at Harold's for an evening, and we were all sitting around, and I pulled out a guitar, and Pete said to me, "You know, I never do this anymore. I'm too busy doing shows. You know, it's hard to find a time to sit around and just sing."
There's that TV show I've seen. I think it was him hosting and you as a guest, and you did Turn, Turn, Turn together. Maybe
yes,
it was
Rainbow,
1966.
The Rainbow Connection, I think he called it.
Yeah.
And I did a few songs with him on that show. That was one of the first television shows that really was a musical show.
Yeah, when I was music director here in 82, he approached me because Sing Out was in trouble, and he was trying to save it, and he asked if he could do a monthly Sing Out radio bulletin on BAI, so that started the following month.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, Sing Out is now this great big book.
Yeah.
He was always trying to get me to sing this one song of his, which I never have learned, but I have many, many, many letters from Pete, including one that is a fan letter about a song that I wrote called The Fallow Way, and it's one of my treasured possessions. He said, "I love this song so much." I had sung it at the festival, what's the name of the ship?
Clearwater?
That he sailed around in.
The Clearwater.
I was singing at the Clearwater Festival a few years ago, and Pete was there, and I sang that song, The Fallow Way, and somebody who was driving him around put the cassette of that song into the radio and played it over and over and over again, and he finally listened to it, and he said, "Oh, that's a wonderful song." So he wrote me a fan letter about The Fallow Way, which I treasure. And, you know, he was amazing. He was I called him after Jim Brown did that big movie about him, and it was in the theaters, and then it was on television. It just really broke the story of Pete Seeger to the rest of the world. It was a huge success. And I called him up afterwards, and I said, "How do you feel about this?" Oh, I called him about what I thought was the middle of a very difficult political situation in the country. This was about maybe 7 or 8 years ago, when before we really got into trouble. And I said, how are you feeling about the situation nowadays? He said, I have never been more hopeful. I mean, that was Pete. He was never discouraged, really. I mean, he may have said various things in his songs, but he was fundamentally an optimist. So then after the movie came out, I called him up and I said, Pete, this is so exciting about the movie. And he said, you know, it's ruined my life. And I said, how can that be? He said, because I have been handwriting the answers to my fan mail for 50 years. And he said, now the movie's out, I can't do that because we get bundles of letters every day coming up to Peekskill. And I can't answer them. I have to, Toshi had to make out a form that we send out to everybody.
Oh, well, everybody should have such troubles.
Everybody, that's what I said to him. Everybody should be so lucky.
One of the programs we have for this Pete Seeger Day is an interview that was done by a woman named Sonia Malkin in Radio Kingston in 1962, when he was still being blacklisted, talking about his dealings with the House Un-American Activities Committee and everything. And we're trying to get some benefit concerts for BAI in the 60s that I think you and Pete both were in, and the Pacifica Radio Archives is searching for them. But anyway, it's just so wonderful to have you be a part of a day like this and you know, reminisce a little bit about your own connections with Pete, who obviously was just a wonderful, marvelous presence, and although he'd hate people telling him he was. But thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. Well, I adored him, and I was with him the day he died. I had been up to see him. He wasn't able to speak, but I held his hand and I sang him Bells of Rimney.
Ah.
And a few hours later, he was gone.
Wow. Well, Judy Collins, you've brightened our day so much. Thanks for giving us a few minutes. And,
my pleasure. Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Oh, what will you give me? Say the sad bells of Rimney. Is there hope for the future? Say the brown bells of Merthyr. Who made the mine owner? Say the black bells of Rondaw. And the vandals in court, say the bells of Newport. All will be well if say the green bells of Cardiff. Why so worried, sister? Will you give me, say the sad bells of Rimney?
This song was written in the 1930s by a Welsh coal miner. Oh, what will you give me, say the sad bells of Rimney? Is there hope for the future? Say the brown bells of Merthyr. Who made the mine owner? Say the black bells of Rondaw. And who robbed the miner? Say the grim bells of Blaenau. They will plunder willy-nilly. Say the bells of Caerphilly. They have fangs, they have teeth, up the loud bells of Nice. Even God is uneasy, say the moist bells of Swansea. And what will you give me, say the sad bells of Hungary. Throw the vandals in court, say the bells of Newport. All would be well if, say the green bells of Cardiff. Why so worried, sisters, why sang the silver bells of Wye? Oh, what will you give me, say the sad bells of Lynn?
Sisters, why sang the silver bells?